Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Our topic today is the White House and NSA program of secret spying on Americans. The president and attorney general have said the program is legal. Members of Congress from both sides of the political aisle say they disagree. We will hear from Carol Rose, the executive director of the ACLU of Massachusetts, and Declan McCullough, chief political correspondent for CNET Network's News.com. The administration argues that the NSA spy program is very limited where surveilling Americans is concerned, but rights activists, senators, and journalists are skeptical. Carol Rose is executive director of the ACLU of Massachusetts. She joins us to talk about a case involving a librarian who stood up to the FBI and demanded a warrant before turning over her library's computer, and the ACLU's lawsuit over the NSA spy program. Carol Rose, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Dori.
What are your impressions right now after the hearings and after so much more has come out about the NSA spy program? Do you think that the president is going to be called to task, or are you getting the impression that things are sort of moving in a direction that is unwelcome?
Well, I think that, you know, despite the PR campaign that the president and Mr. Rove are putting forward to try to justify their illegal wiretapping of ordinary Americans, I think that there's really a tipping point where conservatives, small c conservatives, and liberals alike are really joining together to say the issue here isn't simply one of privacy rights. The larger issue is really an attack on our system of checks and balances, the very structure of our government, because the administration effectively is saying, Dori, that they would like to have unfettered executive branch authority and that no one, not Congress and not the courts, are able to make them comply with the laws that every other person in America has to comply with.
Members of Congress from both sides of the political aisle seemed a little bit put out with our Attorney General Antonio Gonzalez as he evaded some of the questions. Do you have a take on the hearings yet?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think not only were his answers quite evasive, but they were even disturbing. And we saw a number of people, a number of Republicans, basically trying to give Mr. Gonzalez a way out by saying, gee, maybe if you would just ask us to authorize this and approve it, we would do that. But what the administration is saying is, no, we don't even need to make it legal. We can do it whether or not it's legal. So it was quite an extraordinary seizure of power, in effect, by the executive branch to say, even if this Congress would roll over and give us everything we wanted, we don't even want to ask for permission. We want to be able to spy on ordinary Americans and not even get congressional oversight or any kind of permission to do so. It kind of harkens back to when Richard Nixon said, if the president does it, it's not illegal. Well, that didn't work for Richard Nixon, and I don't think it's ultimately going to work for George Bush either.
Now, tell us the nature of the ACLU's lawsuit here. Who's it filed against, and what does it say?
The National ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union Office, the legal department, has filed a suit against the NSA on behalf of a whole range of organizations and individuals, saying that it violates the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, right to be free from search and seizure, and also the very system of checks and balances for the president to authorize illegal eavesdropping of ordinary Americans and other people, for that matter, without getting a warrant. And it says that that violates our very system of checks and balances, and it's thus unconstitutional.
Now, as I read through the kinds of things that you have said in articles and publications, I noticed one that stood out, and it has to do with the answer that you have put forward here, which is not to shelve the Bill of Rights, but to create an expedited process for obtaining warrants.
That's absolutely right, Dori. I mean, no one, not the ACLU and probably no one that I know of, would say that somehow the government shouldn't be eavesdropping or wiretapping on members of Al-Qaeda, on people who would do our country ill. That's not the point. The point is they already had the power to do that. They didn't need to do it outside the bounds of the law. And where they can do that legally is in two ways. If it's a criminal investigation, they can do it under Title II of the criminal code, they can actually get a warrant and eavesdrop on people who they think are committing a crime and are going to imminently commit a crime. If it's a foreign intelligence surveillance, to get foreign intelligence information about Al-Qaeda or other terrorist networks, they can do it under something called the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act Court, FISA. Now, this is a secret court that operates 24/7. There are 11 federal judges who sit on this court, and they give warrants for the government to engage in eavesdropping when the target is a foreign agent and they think that there's potential terrorist activity going on. The court turns this stuff around within hours, turns the warrants around. Of the 20,000 warrants that have been requested of the FISA court, only four in the history have ever been turned down. So the legal mechanisms were in place and should be in place for the government to be able to do what it needs to do to keep us safe. The concern here is that the government has said, we don't even want to comply with those laws. We want to be able to do whatever we want outside of the law. And in effect, it has very little to do with the war on terrorism and has a lot to do with whether or not we're going to permit our system of checks and balances to be undermined.
What the White House and Justice Department are arguing, and also a member of the NSA, Michael Hayden, argued that this is a small, confined program. It only involves the wiretapping of known terrorists in conversations with Americans. I mean, a lot of people just, frankly, don't believe them.
It's done in secret, so it's hard to know how many or who specifically are being wiretapped. But a couple things we do know. One is that we know that there are thousands of people who've been wiretapped. The second thing we know is that almost everyone who's ever come into this big net of wiretapping has subsequently been cleared. And that was reported just a couple days ago in the Washington Post because somebody leaked it to the Washington Post. So a lot of it is happening in secrecy, but what we're getting, the information we're getting is that we're not really getting a lot of terrorists through this kind of a dragnet system. The other thing that creates concern is that through the ACLU's use of the Freedom of Information Act law, which permits people to get files that the government keeps on them, we do know that the government, through the Defense Department and through the FBI, has been spying on people for their protected political activity. A lot of the targets have included people who are involved in the environmental movement, people, prevention of cruelty to animals, the PETA group, Quakers, and anti-war groups have been targeted, the people at the ACLU have been targeted. So we know that this kind of domestic spying is going on, and there's really little reason to think that if the government is doing it through the Defense Department and through the FBI, that somehow they wouldn't be doing it through the NSA spying program. But what we do know is that thousands of people have been targeted, but we simply don't know, because it's being kept secret, how many exactly and who they are.
If this is the case, and this government is trying to basically X out the rights it doesn't want us to have because it wants to operate with impunity, then what kinds of things would you suggest that we do?
I think it's important that people take action. And certainly on our website, ACLU.org, we have a number of steps that people can take to take action. I think that people need to be saying to their members of Congress, and in particular to the Republicans in Congress who control the Congress right now, that we really need to have an independent prosecutor who's going to investigate any crimes that have taken place, including crimes the president and his people may have committed, that we need to have a bipartisan congressional committee, sort of like the 9/11 Commission, with subpoena powers so that we can have some legitimate oversight of what's going on. We do know that people within the administration, including Mr. Hayden, who you mentioned earlier, have said that we need to have an open investigation and public debate before we make these decisions. We know that James Comey, who is the acting attorney general, the deputy to John Ashcroft, and when Mr. Ashcroft, as attorney general, was in the hospital, James Comey, as his acting director, refused to authorize this program, saying that it did not have adequate congressional oversight. So we know that a lot of people, traditional conservatives, have been concerned about this program, and we believe that the conservatives in Congress equally should be concerned, because it is the very question of whether the president can act without the oversight of Congress or the judiciary. It's an attack on our system of checks and balances, and we need to look to Congress, and we, the people, have to call upon our representatives in Congress from both sides of the aisle to begin to launch an investigation and to really find out what's going on and why is this president, who has a lot of power right now to conduct the war on terrorism, asserting that he does not have to obey the law.
I want to turn to the story of this librarian in Massachusetts who basically said to the FBI, get a warrant before you ask me to turn anything over from our library. How did this all happen, and what kinds of things did this librarian do?
Well, my understanding of it, and I think that the mayor of Newton, David Cohen, as well as the librarian, were really showed a profile and courage on this case. What happened is the FBI and the local police showed up at the Newton Free Public Library and basically said, we want to take all 23 computers. There's been a bomb hoax against Brandeis University. And it's my understanding that they knew from the beginning that it was a hoax and not a real threat. And so that they knew there wasn't an imminent danger, or they believed that the librarian and the mayor were told there was not an imminent danger. And what they said is, well, you know, you really have to have a search warrant, because when you think about the hundreds or thousands of people who might have used one of these 23 computers and still have a record of that, their rights to privacy are also protected by the Fourth Amendment. And so they said, you need to get a search warrant. And apparently it took the FBI something like 10 hours to go and get a search warrant. And then the press, local press, has been quite critical in saying, well, you know, the librarian should have just been cooperative and invited them into her home, like you could invite the FBI into your home without a search warrant. Of course, that misses the point, which is, first of all, the librarian isn't authorized to decide when the law applies and when it doesn't. The librarian, like all people, from the president down to every librarian and every citizen, is compelled to obey the law. And when the law is on the books, especially in a time of crisis, you need to obey the law. And second, it wasn't her home. It was the library, and it wasn't her records that were on those computers. It was hundreds or thousands of other people's records that were on those computers. So the librarian really did the right thing, and I think the mayor did the right thing as well in backing her up. And I think it's important that we recognize that if there's a problem, the problem is with why it took the FBI 10 hours to get a search warrant, when in fact we have these expedited procedures in place to ensure that the warrants could be turned around if there was an actual threat within a matter of minutes or hours.
Just finally, what has happened as a consequence of all of this? Is the librarian okay? Has she come out of this with problems or no?
From what I understand is, there's been a lot of traffic, email and letters and phone calls on both sides. Some people saying that she and the mayor did the wrong thing, because, by God, you should let the FBI come in and get it to stop any crime that's taking place. But I think that's based on a misconception, both of the facts, because apparently they did know that it was a hoax right away and there wasn't an imminent threat. But I think it's also based, even if it had been, I think it's based on a misreading of what the role of a citizen is. And every one of us is, you know, compelled to uphold the law and to obey the law. And it's not her right to say when the law does and doesn't apply. And the problem here is not with the librarian. She did the right thing. The mayor did the right thing. They really were courageous and patriotic in what they did. And the problem, it seems to me, is that if the FBI and the local law enforcement officials can't figure out a way to get a warrant in less than 10 hours, when they have all of these tools available to them to do so, then we need to find out what's wrong with that system.
Carol Rose, thanks so much for joining us.
Dory, nice to speak with you. Thank you.
Carol Rose is Executive Director of the ACLU of Massachusetts. Journalist Declan McCullough, Chief Political Correspondent for CNET Network's News.com, writes on technology and the law, as well as issues of free speech and U.S. government surveillance. His February 7th, 2006 articles in News.com are titled NSA Eavesdropping, How Might It Work? And also, Some Companies Help the NSA, But Which? I asked Declan McCullough if things were better or worse than he might have expected when he began his intensive work in these areas some 10 years ago.
Well, it's both better and worse than we thought. Back when I started Polytech and I started writing about these topics as a reporter in 1994, we weren't really sure how free the Internet was going to be. There were discussions about restricting the domestic use, not export, not sale, but even the use of encryption to protect your privacy. And there's also concerns about what was basically an attempt by the then Clinton administration to force everyone to use telephones with backdoors for the feds, and this was the Clipper chip. Both of those proposals failed. The Clipper chip was eventually abandoned, and also the controls on the domestic use of encryption never went anywhere. And so by those two measures, we're actually in better shape. But the flip side is that we also have a lot of other concerns nowadays. I mean, you listeners probably know about the NSA surveillance and how that is playing out politically.
When we look at the NSA spy program in terms of government officials and members of the intelligence community, we might imagine a small number of people being involved in all of this. In reality, though, are there private companies, you know, public relations firms, other countries perhaps involved?
We have more questions than answers, but let's review what information has become public. The LA Times reported that AT&T was involved, is basically in bed with the National Security Agency, the NSA, on this. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation is filing a lawsuit, basically a class action lawsuit against AT&T, accusing them of collaborating and violating their customers' privacy in violation of the law. So there are some companies that have to, almost certainly have to be collaborating with the NSA for this to work. Another way is that the NSA can send a submarine down and tap into the fiber optic cables, and there is a submarine that's been retrofitted for this. The USS Jimmy Carter, actually, is what it's called. So it's not clear who's collaborating and who's not. I'm working on an article for news.com that's going to shed some light on this.
Why would they put it on a submarine?
There are essentially two ways to intercept communications. I mean, I'm maybe making a gross generalization, but if you want to eavesdrop on communications that are traveling, say, between the U.S. and Asia or the Middle East, and you don't have the cooperation of companies in the Middle East, then you have two obvious alternatives. The first is to talk to the company that's maintaining the connection link and plug into their switching station here in the U.S., which in the case of the undersea fiber optic cables that handle most of the traffic is often New York, Long Island, someplace on the East Coast, which is where the final connection before the fiber connection happens. The second way to do it is if you can't get that cooperation or you think that that secret may leak, because these are pretty incendiary things you're doing, is you send a submarine down and you intercept the cable offshore, and then you can just tap into, if you're very, very careful and know exactly what you're doing, you can just eavesdrop on the communications that way.
The president has said that this program of using the NSA to spy on Americans, listen to their phone calls and so on, is only being used when there's a known link to a terrorist or terrorist group. Do you believe him?
I don't think that's entirely accurate summary of what's going on. I think it's more likely that a huge amount of communications are being intercepted and sifted through, maybe even every bit of communications the NSA can lay its hands on in terms of international traffic, email and voice calls. Then the question is how much is actually retained and looked at by humans. And perhaps in that case, it's only a small amount. But I think the evidence that we have to date suggests that a huge amount is being intercepted and then only a small amount is being retained.
And so we can turn to this story by Eric Lichtbau and James Risen. They're saying that the National Security Agency has traced and analyzed a large volume of telephone and internet communications flowing into and out of the U.S. by tapping directly into some of the American telecommunications system's main arteries. Just talk about that description.
Well, if you want to tap into communications domestically in the U.S., going to be a very, very difficult thing to do because there are so many ways that communications can be exchanged. I mean, you can have two companies that want to chat with each other, let's say AOL and Yahoo or Microsoft or something like that, and they can run a fiber optic line directly between their servers. Not everything is going to go through what used to be called May East and May West, which are sort of switching stations. I once visited May East out in the suburbs of Virginia and back about 10 years ago when a lot of communications on the East Coast were being run through it. But nowadays you have a lot more private arrangements. And so just doing a wholesale tapping in the U.S. of everything is pretty much infeasible based on what we know, and also you'd have too many people knowing about it. But if you want to tap overseas links, well, this goes back to going after undersea's fiber optic cable or having some sort of tap on the switching station, basically a building near where the fiber optic cable dives under the ocean.
Once having gotten a warrant, would it take a long time to wiretap somebody in this way?
The Bush administration has said through the Department of Justice that doing some sort of warrant seeking via the FISA court, the court established in the post-Watergate reforms, would just take too long because it has to be signed off by the Attorney General and then it has to go to the court. Maybe I'm missing something. I've read everything that's been published on this, and I've read the law, and all it says is that it has to be approved by the Attorney General, and it has to go through the FISA court, and both of this can be done via email, via instant messenger, via telephone conversations. It doesn't say that this has to be done in forms in triplicate. I mean, I can imagine a five-minute call between the Attorney General and the Chief Judge of the FISA court in which something like this can be approved very, very quickly.
Talk about how they would then extract the kind of information that would provide proof that people were talking with terrorists, I mean, known terrorists.
Right. Again, let's draw a distinction between domestic conversations, which are plentiful, and the kinds of conversations that cross the U.S. border. And it's much easier to tap the second type. But in terms of how it would be done, there's a tremendous volume of information pouring through even these fiber optic cables, but the NSA also has a tremendous budget and tremendous resources to figure out how to do this. In principle, it's not that difficult. You have a very good voice recognition software, speaker independent, so if someone says Al-Qaeda, you can flag that conversation and then have a computer record, listen, and sift through that. It's even easier if you're just looking at email messages or web browsing. You have to have a certain amount of rudimentary intelligence on this computer that's sifting through this so it can understand an instant message conversation versus in different protocols. Google's going to use a different one than Microsoft, for instance. But, I mean, this is something that an undergraduate computer science student could do. The only trick is making it really, really fast so it works in real time, and this is why the NSA has a lot of money.
Now, let's talk about some of the corporate involvement of Google or Yahoo, some of the other companies like Comcast. What do you know about what is being done to look at the involvement of these companies with this program?
Representative John Conyers, a Democrat from Michigan, has sent letters, I guess it was two Fridays ago, to these companies, Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, and Comcast, and so on, saying, essentially, are you collaborating with the NSA, or do you require that prosecutors or police or intelligence agents have a court order before you turn over information about your subscribers? And I'm going to have an article that goes up on news.com on Monday with some details about this, but I think that the short answer is that they're not the ones who are collaborating by and large. Instead, it's going to be the backbone providers, the AT&Ts of the world, companies like Level 3 that your listeners may not have heard of, that actually are the backbone providers and the people who keep the fiber optic cable humming. We do know that in the past the U.S. government has exchanged intelligence information with the U.K., with Australia, with New Zealand. It's basically a working information exchange relationship, and there are, if you look at the number of undersea fiber optic cables that go through one of those four countries, it's a huge amount. That's up there in the 80% range, and so with that type of information sharing, the U.S. has an incredible system at its disposal.
What are some of the present concerns about the use of these new sophisticated technologies to surveil people? What are some of the concerns there?
Well, here's one, for instance, and this pops up in some of the concerns over Google and other search engines, and that is they store a lot of information about their users. They really don't delete anything. And if you have an account at Gmail and you gave them an off-site email address, or let's say that you use Google's AdSense and even have, and they might have your home address and social security number required to pay you if you put ads up on your site. In any case, these search engines have a lot of information about you, and it is possible for federal prosecutors to send a subpoena saying, I want to know the Internet Protocol addresses and perhaps real names, if you have them, of anyone who searched for a certain type of string, Al-Qaeda terrorism, for instance. It's unlikely that they'll choose those three words, but you can imagine in other cases where they might be looking for information. Maybe you're doing, maybe you're a high school student doing a report on the problem of child pornography online, and you type in the word child pornography in Google, and then all of a sudden, the next day, you have a knock on your door with two FBI agents waiting to arrest you. So you can imagine things like this happening. It hasn't happened yet, but the problem is the information's there, and it's available via subpoena, so it will happen eventually.
It does seem overwhelming sometimes when you consider the sophistication of the technology being used.
It does seem overwhelming. There are both technical and legal or political things you can do. And the first is to use some form of encryption software on your own home computer. The Macintosh OS X later versions has it built in. It's called File Vault. You just click Preferences and turn it on. If you're using a Windows computer, then you can download a similar program from pgp.com, disk encryption is what it's called. Whole disk encryption, I think, is their title. And so if your computer is ever stolen, if you lose it, if it goes through airport security and never comes out the other end of the conveyor machine, at least someone won't be able to use that information against you. Another thing you can do is when you're web surfing, especially if you want to protect your privacy, is sign up for a service like anonymizer.com that will not keep records of what you're doing. And so when you connect to a search engine and you're going through Anonymizer, all of a sudden all the search engine knows is that you're coming from Anonymizer. Doesn't know that you're actually coming from a Verizon or Comcast or SBC IP address.
What about the political side of any government office monitoring our searches or monitoring our online use or our phone calls? How could this be used by people with political goals to try and, let's say, get information about what Democrats versus Republicans versus independents or Greens might be thinking or working on at any given time?
Well, there's no evidence that there's wholesale monitoring of Americans just doing stuff domestically is going on. It would take a lot more work than just the overseas eavesdropping that we talked about earlier. But if that is happening, let me put it this way: it's happened before. You see the FBI being used for partisan political gain. You also just see the FBI going too far. It eavesdropped on Eleanor Roosevelt, Supreme Court justices, Martin Luther King. These aren't dark days in the history of our country, and we had, after J. Edgar Hoover died, we had reforms put in place, and it's supposed to be a better agency now. We don't know. We have no reason to believe that the same kinds of abuses are happening today, but they could be. So probably the long-term solution is to reduce the power of the federal government, have more and more offenses be prosecuted at the state level. The FBI didn't exist until the early 1900s, and the Republic survived.
The laws pertaining to citizens versus reporters are different, aren't they, about surveillance that the government can do?
At some level, reporters have a few additional protections. I was subpoenaed by the Department of Justice, and they did not follow their own internal guidelines and regulations. But if you want to subpoena a reporter, you're supposed to get clearance from the Attorney General. You're supposed to negotiate with the reporter and so on to see if the media organization will voluntarily turn over information. So to that extent, reporters do have some additional protections. But in general, reporter is a reporter, and you can eavesdrop on a reporter as easily as you can anyone else. It's not like reporters are written into the wiretapping regulations, thou shalt not wiretap a reporter.
Thanks so much for joining us on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you very much.
Journalist Declan McCullough of News.com. You can also find his online work at polytechbot.com, PoliTechBot.com. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced at WHUS Stores, radio for the people at UConn. WHUS.org to listen live, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. For transcripts and discussion, try TalkNation.org. Our music is by Fritz Heed. Thank you.